Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
4 days to go, one plan down, and your guess about what's going to happen with this debt ceiling thing is as good as mine. So how about we focus on what we do know? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. Marketplace Innovation Reporting is supported by the 2011 Jaguar XJ. Learn more at a local dealer or at jaguarusa.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Kai Rizdal. Today is Friday, the 29th of July. It is great to have you with us. The Democratic Senate has voted down a Republican plan that passed the House just hours ago. The plan would have raised the nation's debt ceiling in exchange for a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. And so, with the bill's defeat, we are right back to where we started from. In a word, uncertainty. We did get one piece of certainty from the government today, though. The Commerce Department said the U.S. economy is only growing at a rate of 1.3% a year. Keep in mind that as recently as a few months ago, economists were predicting growth of twice that much. And the lower number comes with consequences, as Marketplace's Jeff Horwich reports.
Well, at least we solved the puzzle of the jobless recovery. For Wharton School of Business economist Justin Wolfers, that's one consolation from the fact that GDP barely grew last quarter. It turns out the numbers for the previous quarter and the whole recovery to date were also worse than we thought. Wolfers has a new term for what we're in, the recovery-less recovery.
In fact, it may not even be a recovery anymore. If you look at the entire first half of 2011, total income in the economy barely grew faster than the population. So we're awfully close to actually a recession.
Another recession, that is. Economist Mark Vittner at Wells Fargo says it's time to reset our expectations for the rest of the year and beyond, for job growth, for our stock portfolios, for consumer spending, which grew just 0.1% in the last 3 months. Plus,
inflation is running hotter than they thought it was. And so right now, even these relatively low levels of inflation are wiping out almost all of consumers' purchasing power.
And many in Washington won't want to hear it, but Vittner says it might be time to reset our expectations for cutting the deficit. Slower economic growth means trillions of dollars in future tax revenues the deficit cutters were counting on won't be there. The lower GDP numbers are ammo for those arguing there could not be a worse time to try to balance the country's books, like former White House economic advisor Jared Bernstein.
The need for this government to turn its focus in the short term from the budget deficit to the jobs deficit is very much amplified by this report.
Of course, you can amplify something all you want. That doesn't mean it will resonate in Washington. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Okay, so what about this debt ceiling fight? Now that the Republican plan that passed the House today has been voted down by the Senate, the focus turns to a Democratic plan that was unveiled this week by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. The two plans are different, but both would raise the ceiling in exchange for deep spending cuts. And as Marketplace's David Gura reports, we already know what some of those cuts are.
Lots of departments are going to get less money. Gary Bertlist is a fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Obviously, anything that was funded as part of the stimulus program has a very bleak future.
That means turning down the spigot at the Energy Department and the National Institutes of Health. Goodbye to all those infrastructure projects. There's bipartisan agreement to cut federal financial aid for students. Beyond that, specifics are hard to come by.
How exactly those spending cuts are implemented, where the dollars are found, is something that is absolutely yet to be determined.
That's Alex Brill. He used to be the House Ways and Means Committee's chief economist. What's on the table is domestic discretionary spending, education, housing, transportation. Paul Weinstein directs the public management program at Johns Hopkins. He says many agencies are in familiar territory. They're under the knife year after fiscal year.
Commerce always feels that way. Energy often feels that way because a lot of people don't always understand what those programs do or what they're about.
Weinstein says the U.S. could cut back on contractors. It could keep government salaries frozen. But it'll be up to Congress to decide. And as always, Alex Brill says,
one man's waste is another man's critical program.
The cuts will start out small, spelling trouble for some agencies. But over time, they're expected to grow, and that could mean the end for some programs. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
So it turns out we actually breached the debt ceiling briefly back in 1995. We've got an interactive history at Marketplace.org. When it comes to Wall Street today, looks like the GDP figures were more important to traders than the debt ceiling fight. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Well, now that we know the Republican plan to raise the debt ceiling is dead, it's up to Democrats in the Senate to make their bill appealing enough for Republicans to support. The two sides have 4 days left to reach some kind of compromise before we hit the debt ceiling. Here to talk about all this with us are Lee Gallagher of Fortune Magazine and Sudeep Reddy of The Wall Street Journal. Guys, thanks for being here.
Hi, Jeremy.
Well, let's start with the possibility that a deal is agreed to. Sudeep, what do you think are the chances of some last-minute compromise at this point?
Well, there are some signs, Jeremy, that we're moving toward a deal by perhaps the end of the weekend or early in the week. This entire game of chicken was designed to go until the 11th hour and to really come together at the last minute. Otherwise, you don't have leverage on either side of this. But even if we do get a deal, it's pretty clear that it's not going to be big enough to prevent a downgrade in the U.S. credit rating. And so we're going to be going through some degree of market turmoil regardless of what happens. And that certainly would be relatively minor compared to the predictions of catastrophe, but it's still significant.
What about you, Lee? You think there's going to be a deal?
I would agree with Sudeep. And in addition to the credit rating risk, I mean, the big picture here, if the debt ceiling goes up, spending is going down. I mean, no matter what happens, it's been made abundantly clear.
Right.
And as you alluded to earlier in the show, I mean, this is the absolute worst time for that to be happening. It's almost like somebody orchestrated this from above today for us to get these GDP numbers, as if we didn't know already that we are playing with something really, really delicate here. Our economy, which is as fragile as it's been in decades, you know, it's just been made so clear that this is really dangerous territory. When you cut spending at a time like this, we're going to be feeling the consequences.
Well, Lee, it seems like it's certainly possible still at this point that we are not going to get a deal by Tuesday. What's going to happen then? I mean, who's preparing for what and what are they preparing for?
I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk that if that happens, we're looking at a situation along the lines of when Lehman failed in 2008. I mean, the implications there are pretty big. You know, first, I think we'd have a wave of panic selling. Stocks, bonds, the dollar would all fall. The real risk is that the short-term lending market freezes up. You know, interest rates would raise everywhere, and that would cripple demand and, you know, possibly trigger another recession. So it's not pretty.
Sudeep Reddy, what do you think? What are you going to be watching for if there's no deal?
If there's no deal, we can expect one thing for sure, and that will be chaos. And chaos not only in the U.S., but across markets around the world. Really, we need to see something by Sunday night to prevent any further instability in financial markets. And if we go into the middle of the week without some resolution to this, then I think we're going to start seeing some very, very large drops in stock markets. Some people have suggested 10 or 20%. I don't think that's unreasonable. There are some contingency plans in the Treasury Department, in the Fed, the break the glass plans to try to respond to some of this, but they all acknowledge that there's no way they're going to be able to prevent most of the damage that will occur if this goes to that point.
Guys, it seems like one thing is pretty clear after all of this. The U.S. is showing itself as unable to really come together and solve big problems. How does that look to the rest of the world, Lee, do you think?
It doesn't look good. I mean, there's so much damage that's already been done in terms of tarnishing our reputation. You know, we are the biggest economy in the world. We're the gold standard when it came to our debt. That's all up in question now. And on top of that, I mean, confidence has been shaken internally among companies who are already delaying hiring, investing, and they're just going to be stockpiling more because of this. So we've already seen the damage. There's a lot that can't really be undone.
Sudeep?
I absolutely agree. There's some fundamental damage that's been done to the economy and the American psyche out of all of this, both for businesses and consumers. And, of course, around the world, there was a Greek official who was here in Washington this week, and he made a crack about the U.S. having trouble with its own politics. And if Greek officials are starting to lecture the U.S. and look at the U.S. as an example, then you know we're in trouble, and you know we've gone way too far in terms of managing our own finances.
We'll leave it on that pleasant note. Sudeep Reddy of The Wall Street Journal and Lee Gallagher of Fortune Magazine. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks,
Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy.
When it comes down to it, the reason we're having this debt ceiling fight right now is about three little letters, AAA. The nation's AAA rating is a symbol of America's economic strength and the fact that if you loan us money, we're going to pay you back. So is our standing in the global economy about to fall? Well, if it is, commentator Liaquat Ahmed says that's not a bad thing.
China is projected to overtake the U.S. as the largest economy in the world sometime around the end of this decade. And there's a possibility within 40 years, China's economy will be twice our size. So how will we adjust to no longer being number one? Now, it is important to remember that being number one involves more than just having the largest GDP. A little history first. The U.S. overtook Britain as the biggest economy in the world in 1870. But London remained the financial center of the world, and the pound was the dominant currency for another 40 years. So just because the Chinese have a bigger GDP than ours does not necessarily mean the immediate end of U.S. dominance. But things will be different. Most importantly, we will need a change of attitude in this country. Currently, we set the rules for the global economy. Then through a process of carrots and sticks, we get everyone else to follow those rules. Once China becomes the largest economy, it will want to get into the act, trying to influence things like how our corporations operate in the global marketplace, what our credit rating should be, and on what terms we can borrow. We're not going to like many of these new rules, but we're going to have to swallow our pride occasionally and go along with them. Losing the number one position will not by itself lead to a fall in our standard of living. In fact, there can be some benefits to no longer being the dominant player. During times of crisis, we have often had to take on more than our fair share of the burden of stabilizing the global economy. That allowed other countries to freeload off our efforts. So it will be nice to let the Chinese start picking up the tab and freeload off them for a change.
Liaquat Ahmed is the author of Lords of Finance. If you've got a comment, write to us, marketplace.org. Just click on the link that says contact. Coming up, the environment's been paying a price for China's rapid growth.
The pattern in China has been to develop land, not to protect it.
Until now, thanks to a group of Chinese billionaires. But first, let's do the numbers. It was the worst week in a year for Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell another 96 points. That's 0.8% to close at 12,143. The NASDAQ dropped 9 points, a third of a percent, to finish at 2756. S&P 500 lost 8 points, 0.6% to end the day at 1292. For the week, the Dow fell 4.2%. Merck swallowed a loss of 2.2%. The drug company met earnings expectations but announced more layoffs to come. Yahoo clicked down nearly 3%. Netgear, the maker of computer modems and routers, disconnected 10%. Bond prices rose, though, amid all the debt ceiling mess. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.8%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. Marketplace entrepreneurship reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance, trained local agents committed to small business success. More at 1-866-200-4BIZ. Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Mm-hmm. from the Marketplace Statebook. Here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for June. It's International Clown Week. Kind of scary and fun all at once. And dude, MTV turns 30. 30. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Kai Rizdal. A year ago, Marketplace sent me on a journey through the state of Tennessee for 2 weeks to see how the economic recovery was playing out. One of the people I met on that trip was A.C. Wharton, the mayor of Memphis. It's a city of about 650,000 people, more than 60% of whom are African American. About 20% of the city's residents live below the poverty line. Well, given all of today's news, the uncertainty in Washington, the slow growth in the U.S. economy, we decided it'd be a good idea to check back in with Mayor Wharton and get the view from Memphis. Mayor Wharton, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back, Jeremy.
Well, first off, how is the city of Memphis doing in July 2011 in the economic recovery?
Well, our unemployment numbers obviously are still stubbornly low. But that's something that I don't think is driven as much by the immediate economy as just some historical situations that we have here. But our sales taxes are up. Our job recruiting efforts are really strong. All in all, I would say that in the not-too-distant future, you're going to see a pretty good turnaround here. But even with that, Jeremy, there are some chronic conditions for so many of our residents and citizens we're going to have to work on.
Well, and when it comes to city finances, you, like all these other cities, are having to make cuts. I saw that you are laying off about 100 people who work for the city and cutting all city worker salaries by 5%.
That is correct. You've heard of this slogan, I've got a bullseye on my back. I think I've got about 40 bullseyes on my back. And I say that it might seem lighthearted, but it is a lot of pain. We're having to cut. We're serious about it. We're reducing library hours. But one thing we haven't done is I took a pledge, and I'll keep this pledge. I'm not going to lay off police officers or firefighters. We've got to maintain the public safety.
Let's talk about housing, because that was another big issue when I visited. You sued one of the big banks, Wells Fargo, for allegedly targeting black homeowners with very risky subprime loans, and then a lot of those homes went into foreclosure. Has that suit moved anywhere?
Well, we did survive a motion to dismiss, fortunately, about that. So there's another motion pending. It's still in court. Obviously, we have sustained great losses, and we'll seek to recover some of those. But the key thing is that we want to hear is that those practices, well, let's put it this way. If they say they did not do it, we'll accept that. Just agree, don't do it again.
We talk about the national unemployment rate at 9.2% or so. When you think about the African-American unemployment rate, it's much higher. What does this recession, this recovery, look like in a city like Memphis that has so many African Americans?
I've been in office about 18 months, and during that time, there have been more than 10,000 new jobs created right here in Memphis. You might say, well, where does that fit in? Tragically, Jeremy, there will be so many members among the ranks of African Americans who, because of lack of skills, criminal records, still will not be able to take advantage of this wave of recovery. So one of the things we're going to work on is job development, economic development, coming up with programs to help those chronically unemployed, and I will say unemployable in many instances.
Well, finally, I want to ask you about the debt ceiling debate that's going on in Washington. As you watch this go down, what are you worried about when it comes to Memphis? How are you at risk?
Oh, it's already come to Memphis. It is hitting us now. When we try to do bond placements, there's much more scrutiny now. So don't think for one moment that the effects of what's happening in Washington remains within the beltway up there. So it is hitting us. There's just too much uncertainty out there.
A.C. Wharton, mayor of Memphis, Tennessee, thanks for joining us again, and best of luck.
Thanks for letting me talk with you for a while.
Our economic growth was 1.3% last quarter. China's GDP, almost 10%. But that rapid growth has often come at the expense of China's environment. And now a group of Chinese billionaires wants to help. They're pooling their money to create China's first private nature preserve. It's an unusual move in a country where the government runs all the national parks. But as Marketplace China correspondent Rob Schmitz reports, the Chinese government could use some help.
The history of Pingwu County's economy is written on its mountainsides. Old-growth forests stood here once. Decades of logging wiped them out. Chen Youping is a government official here.
We got to a point where we nearly had no more trees to chop down. But then the government banned logging. That was in 1998. Since then, our economy has really suffered.
To make up for the lost revenue, Pingwu County turned to hydroelectric power. The government dammed the mountain streams here. The valleys filled with water. All of a sudden, there were lakes surrounded by steep, bare hillsides. And now, the hillsides are disappearing into the lakes. Huge mechanical excavators clear a mountain road. A part of it was wiped out by the latest landslide. All this degradation is par for the course in the poor mountainous regions of China. But the devastation in Pingwu County, tucked away in a remote corner of Sichuan Province, is drawing attention. That's because it's home to nearly a fifth of the world's giant pandas. And that's why a group of China's richest entrepreneurs are pooling their money to buy part of this county, to set it aside so that nobody touches it. The Nature Conservancy is helping them create China's first private nature reserve. Zha Peng works for the conservancy.
The pattern in China has been to develop land, not to protect it.
The 23 entrepreneurs are led by Jack Ma. He's one of China's richest men. He founded the wildly popular internet company Alibaba. According to Chinese media reports, each entrepreneur will contribute $1.4 million over the next 3 years to establish the park. It's a 100-square-mile tract of mountains and forests. Today, the Nature Conservancy's Zhao Peng hikes through the forest. He's looking for a camera set up by scientists that's programmed to take photos when an animal walks by. He finds it, pulls the camera out of a box, and uploads photos taken over the past month onto his laptop.
We got something.
No pandas this time. Instead, a couple shots of porcupines, badgers. There's even a bunch of photos of local villagers trying to steal the camera. Their poverty raises a question. Now that it's clear this land won't be developed, what are they going to get out of this? Chen Xiaohong raises 1,000 chickens on his farm near the park. Though the park will be off limits to tourists, his village won't be. The local government has plans to promote ecotourism here. Chen says that's better than logging.
The stream that runs through my farm used to have 5 kinds of fish. Now, because of the logging and mining upstream, it doesn't have any fish. The environment here needs to be protected.
Chen dreams of opening a restaurant and starting his own organic chicken business. Local government official Chen Youping says this park might prove to be a model to protect other fragile ecosystems in China. Chen runs a nearby government-managed nature reserve. He says such publicly run parks in China suffer from a lack of funding that forces parks to chase profits by building hotels, karaoke halls, and parking lots. And that can defeat the whole purpose of conservation.
I hope this private model works better. It's a new way to manage and fund parks in China, and I think it'll protect more of our natural areas.
The trick, of course, is to get more of China's increasing number of billionaires to part with some of their new wealth. In Pingwu County, Sichuan, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
So it's Friday. We're heading into a weekend with no idea what's going to happen economically on the other side. Anyone else feeling a little deja vu? Well, maybe we're all still kind of shell-shocked from the financial crisis of 2008. Perhaps we could call it post-financial stress disorder.
Doc, I'm so nervous all the time. I just don't know what's going to happen next. I feel like I'm in a James Cameron movie or something.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I've been having this dream.
The one where your wife is dressed up as your mother and...
No, not that one.
Oh.
so I see my money on a football field.
On a football field?
Yeah, and it's trying to get to the goal line.
Okay.
Then out of nowhere, wearing low-budget uniforms, Ireland, Portugal, and Greece come and try to tackle my money, and it gets hit, and I mean hard. But then at the 30-yard line, out of nowhere, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Groupon get in this bubble formation and start pushing my money across the 50-yard line. And nobody knows why these guys are doing so well, but they're flying out there. But listen to this, Doc. As my money starts getting a little steam, Standard & Poor gets on the loudspeaker and says it may call the game on account of rain, so now nothing's really happening. I don't know whether to keep my money in the game or to pull it out. So at this point, Jim Cramer is screaming from the stands. Obama's hiding in the locker room biting his nails. And China's on the sideline threatening to suit up.
Wow. And then what happens?
Well, then my wife comes out in the field in my mother's clothing. But that's not the point.
Wow. Really opened up a can of worms there. Thanks to our skit writers in Sanitas Comedy and to Megan Larson and Rada Bead for bringing it to life.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the Knowledge Effect. By Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation.com. And by Putnam Investments. You can ask your financial advisor about Putnam 529 for America or visit Putnam.com/529. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, just to take us somewhere totally different. The Wall Street Journal has a story about a guy who works at a swanky rooftop hotel pool in New York City. His name is Harrison Anastasio, and he's paid $15 an hour to keep an eye on the guests at the 4-foot-deep pool. And when I say keep an eye on them, here's what I mean. He gets their cell phone numbers and sends them text messages when it's time for them to turn over so they can get an even tan. Anastasio says he wants to keep the job, so he has so far resisted the temptation to call some of his more attractive guests after work. And that is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 96 points. That's 0.8%. The Nasdaq dropped 9 points, 0.33%. And the S&P 500 lost 8 points, 0.6%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is JJ Yore. Coming up this weekend on Marketplace Money, our collective national freakout about the debt ceiling.
We don't know exactly how it's going to impact us, so we go to the default option, which is, panic.
Turning off the Chicken Little that's in all of our heads. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Have a great weekend. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.